Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, where we cover trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world, our communities, and bring them a mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and today I'm joined by Aaron Ghani. Aaron is the founder and CEO of Behavior, an online company that creates digital therapeutics for behavioral health. Aaron is a lifelong technologist with 14 years in the healthcare space. And before founding Behavior, he was the chief technology officer of Humana, a managed care company. Aaron is also a founding member of the Strategic Advisory Board of the Digital Medicine Society and a founding advisory board member of the International Virtual Reality Healthcare Association. Today, Aaron joins us to talk about mental health and virtual reality and the work he's doing with Behavior. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Graham. Great to be with you today.
It is really nice to have you with us. I'm very excited about this show, particularly when we're talking about using virtual reality within mental health as it being such an exciting frontier coming up. As we start out today, if you would, and just so we're clear, explain to us what virtual reality is and share with us the work Behavior is doing that makes your approach to health so very, very unique.
Sure. So I may start with the mission of our company, and then I'll talk about how we use virtual reality to help us accomplish that.
Great.
You know, in my years at Humana, I was fortunate to work on ways to understand our members better so that we could intervene in some way in their lives and try and improve their health. Because a healthier health plan member, obviously it's good for that person, but it's also good for the payer, right? So we were looking for ways to improve health and thus save money. What we increasingly focused on over my last probably 3 to 5 years at Humana was the importance of behavioral health. And certainly we weren't alone. I think that that's an understanding that's expanding in industry that, you know, this is like a meta comorbidity, right?
Whatever
level of health you're at otherwise, if you add in an unmanaged behavioral health condition, whether it's sort of unmanaged stress or anxiety or depression or chronic pain, everything else about your life gets worse. You know, we had a lot of Medicare Advantage members at Humana. So these are older folks, often with multiple chronic conditions they were managing. And if you added in behavioral health conditions, these people suffered a lot more. They cost a lot more in the system. And so this is a really big challenge, right, in terms of pain and suffering and in terms of spend and opportunity to create value. So I became convinced that that was the problem that I wanted to tackle with my business. I'd wanted my own business for many, many years. That's a longer discussion for another time. And I settled on that problem as the sort of the biggest one I could think of in the healthcare space that could have the most impact on people's health and well-being. It's so critically important. And there's certainly a lot going on in the digital medicine and digital therapeutic space. Most of what's happening in that space, people are using smartphones or tablets or sort of more traditional technologies. And that makes a lot of sense, right? There's certain advantages to cell phones or smartphones, like everybody's got one. They're, you know, nearly ubiquitous and so on. But what we recognized was virtual reality has some pretty unique neurological benefits and sort of psychological benefits. And so just briefly to answer your question, but well, what is it, for in case some of your listeners don't know, think of VR as a multi-sensory simulation of an experience. Now, most often that's really about what we see. So you typically see VR depicted as a VR headset that people wear. And that is sort of the primary function of what's going on is we're creating an engineered experience primarily through visual and auditory sensory inputs. There are other things you can do with VR with haptics and touch and our sense of smell and so on. But in terms of scalable consumer-facing technology, think visual and auditory. And so it's a collection of technologies. I won't go deep into that, but it's really a cloud platform that we have coupled with these virtual reality headsets, which launched to the consumer market in 2016 when we launched the company, and they've just been getting better and better, cheaper, more comfortable every year since. And we create these experiences, which we can talk more about here in a minute, but focused on providing people behavioral health solutions.
Right. What I really like about that is there's this pairing of one's cognitions, one's emotional experience, the physiological and neurological responses that are all happening at one time. And it sounds like it's through this approach, it's bringing all of those together in such a unique and very effective way. In fact, I was doing a little bit of research on what you guys do, and you're talking about in terms of retention and engagement in the acquisition of different skills and techniques and healthcare management strategies, you're saying there's about a 75% increase in the retention and engagement through the use of virtual reality in comparison to what we might say might be the typical psychoeducational or the traditional teaching method. So there's something very unique about the virtual reality approach, isn't there?
There is. And, you know, as exciting as that statistic is, Graham, of the ability to improve retention, because VR really engages multiple types of learning, sort of emotional learning and motor skills and a whole range of other things. Believe it or not, that's sort of secondary to what we do. What's really at the core of our approach is we want to help people get in touch with, sort of learn to detect and manage their own state of anxious arousal, or to be a little bit more clinical about it, we want to help them get out of sympathetic nervous system activation into parasympathetic.
That's right.
And that's the core, that's sort of layer one. And then around that, we then help them build resilience and non-reactivity through things like mindfulness practice, emotional regulation, skill building, some CBT content. These things really speak to the power of VR as a medium. When we take in these multisensory simulations, our brains process that like we process real life. It's very consistent with how we, you know, live every day. And so when we put you, let's say, in a nature scene in VR, and on a beach or in the woods or what have you, or we put you in a very calming, soothing environment, there is an almost magical effect right out of the gate that we can help people calm down. From there, we then help them build these skills of resilience and non-reactivity. And then the third layer is we can do exposure therapy, not through imaginal exposure, which is sort of a, you know, kind of prefrontal cortex top-down approach, but through an engineered experience, which comes in through those sensory pathways. It's really a bottom-up approach from a neurological perspective. And we can control parameters like what's the scene, what's the intensity, what's the duration, what are your objectives and accomplishments. And so it's really pretty exciting when you think about the ability to create these experiences that help people connect their mind and what they're thinking about and feeling with the physiological response in their bodies.
Yes. I love that. I do a fair amount of couples work in my practice. And I was actually working with a couple last night, and you're talking about the importance. I also do a lot of trauma work and those with anxieties, pretty high anxieties. And I was talking with a couple about, you know, the greatest gift that we can give ourselves and give each other, actually, whether it's in a couple or in our lives, is the ability for self-awareness and the ability for self-control. And that's all enhanced and made possible by activating the parasympathetic nervous system. We've talked about anxiety before. So for me, parasympathetic is paramedic. Paramedics help soothe and heal and bring things down, turn that fight or flight off. And so you're talking about ways to develop and learn that we can emotionally regulate ourselves, that we can develop these resilient techniques that really allow us to be empowered as we manage our lives more mindfully, more effectively, and really help activate our health in an overall way. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we are excited about the work we're doing. And we have programs today in the market to help people understand and better manage their chronic pain.
Yes.
We have a program for better coping with stress generally, which is a collaboration with Johns Hopkins. And then we have a program that augments addiction recovery programs. So it's not a standalone therapy. It's meant to be delivered in conjunction with, you know, clinicians, whether inpatient, intensive outpatient MAT, et cetera. And just to give an example of like that exposure therapy capability, many folks may have heard about using VR for things like treating, let's say, combat veterans with PTSD, right? As a full exposure of a traumatic scene or environment. But let's think maybe more simply, like you're learning to build your refusal skills on your recovery path, right? From substance use disorders. And with imaginal exposure, we could think about, well, imagine you're in a bar and somebody wants to offer you a drink or what have you. In VR, we can put you in a bar and have somebody hand you a beer. And you can, in that moment, think, right, I'm being triggered here, but I can overcome this, right?
Right.
So that's that core of what we do. And then we wrap around that. Back to your original point about education, we provide condition-specific education and motivational content wrapped around that core. So this is where we bring in things like patient stories and narratives of other people who've been through your journey. And it feels like you're sitting there in the room with them in VR. So you're building that connection and empathy. We do motivational interviewing, and we do teach things about the brain or the body, or, you know, a range of techniques. But those three dimensions together, the education, the motivation, and that core of activation, is really how we help people learn to build these skills and stay on their path.
Really good. I was also looking, just throwing another stat, not just about the retention and the engagement process, but you were talking about one of your modules being about pain and the neuroscience education program that you have, and just some phenomenal stats out of that, particularly when we're talking about the improvement in pain management. It's about 77% improvement with a virtual reality. And this becomes significant. We're talking about 50,000 people died of opioid abuse or dependence last year. So we can replace the prescriptions with something like this that is extremely effective. Yeah. We're talking about a whole another layer of really of an efficacious treatment approach here that really works without some of the risk factors involved with prescriptions that we typically see.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, there have been many examples over the last many years. VR has been actually demonstrated to be very effective for a range of health conditions over a couple of decades, but mostly in like university research settings. The equipment wasn't consumer grade and ready to scale. But one thing we've learned over those years, VR has been proven effective many, many times over for acute pain distraction. It's so powerful in that sensory kind of flooding that it will basically take your attention away from a pain in the moment, which is great. Right? That has a lot of utility. What we're doing is something different than that. And you mentioned it, the pain neuroscience education. We love doing clinical partnerships. We have great partners at Evidence in Motion. There's a guy there named Dr. Adrian Lowe, L-O-U-W, and he has spent about 15 years of his life studying and researching and publishing and working with patients on how do we teach them about what pain really is, how it works in the body, the role of the nervous system versus the brain, how the brain can modulate pain. You're teaching them about how it works to help them lower that state of hypervigilance and get over pain catastrophizing and so on. So we started with this incredible evidence-based curriculum and content from Adrian, translated that into our VR program, and then we add all of these differential effects that we talked about with VR. And the patient stories and testimonials are just amazing. They'll bring tears to your eyes. I mean, they literally do that with us. And there's nothing better than having that kind of effect on people.
I want to ask you about kind of maybe one of your favorite stories here in just a second, maybe kind of a case example or maybe kind of a flagship case that gets you excited and pumped up and kind of the reason behind what you're doing. But if you would, as an entree into that, walk me through, if I'm a patient coming in, I'm meeting my clinician and I'm seeking treatments for something in your program, walk me through what my experience would be, or maybe how it's used sometimes as an adjunct, you know, treatment for somebody that I'm already seeing. Give us a sense of that.
Sure. When we first started launching products about 2.5 years ago, we started exclusively in clinical settings. So our first product was that pain product I described. And so you'd be at, let's say, your physical therapy clinic, and your PT would say, hey, Graham, I have this great new program for you. I want you to try out. You don't have to know what VR is. You're just going to sort of follow your PT's instructions. We have a clinician dashboard, and they go in and set up the patient and say, okay, it's Graham Taylor, and he's going to do the pain program on this headset. Go. Headset goes on the patient, 20 minutes or so per session on their own. The PT can go do something else, so it's very efficient. And all of that data, all of what the patient does, all the questions we ask them about pain levels or stress levels or motivational interview results and so on, all of that goes to our cloud platform. So we're collecting this patient profile over time through all of their sessions. Yeah. Our programs are multi-session progressive programs that walk you through this curriculum over time. So that's sort of how it feels. And depending on the program, it's anywhere from 6 to 12 to our new soon to be announced perinatal program is literally a 6-month program for third and fourth trimesters of pregnancy. Really? Yeah, we're excited about launching that and helping expectant mothers with, and we're not a treatment today, so I'm not claiming treatment efficacy, but to help alleviate and get ahead of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders is our goal, right? The other thing we're about to do, Graham, is we are just now launching our ability to put this into patients' homes. And that took a managed headset. So the headset's completely locked down and it's sort of like you take it out of the box, turn it on, and it just runs our application. You can't mess it up. And then we have a smartphone app where the patient themselves can control their flow. but it's still connected to the cloud and their clinician can still monitor their progress, look at results, order new content, et cetera.
That is so good. So we're talking about maybe the application with how so much of mental health and even medical health right now is shifted to telemental health or telehealth in general. So there's an application there, but you're also talking about the use of the biometrics. These are very tracked and these sound like they're important feedback to help shape the treatment itself, monitoring progress, et cetera.
Yes, so there's two dimensions to that. We started out just using heart rate to sort of as a biofeedback loop to change elements of the virtual experience, which sounds kind of straightforward and simple. I think we're all familiar with biofeedback techniques. There's something that's a little hard to describe though when the environment starts changing based on your body's response.
Yes.
And there are many things in VR that until you experience them, they're a little hard to describe. A fun story, not about our patients, but early on in this journey, I was at a conference and a vendor had a camera set up and they were streaming live video from this camera. So the camera's sitting a few feet away and I put on a VR headset and what I'm seeing in the headset is the view from the camera. So who do I see a few feet away? Well, me. And I cannot describe to you how weird that was.
In real time, huh?
It was not like seeing yourself on a 2D screen at all. Because right. Your brain is literally going like, what? You're having an out-of-body experience.
That's right.
It was very powerful. I'm not sure what to do with that clinically, but it was weird.
I can imagine it would be. That's pretty good. Pretty good. Hey, so let's jump into a story. Give me a story of something that just kind of captured the things we're saying. This is what the experience can be, and this is what this technology and this treatment approach can be so useful and beneficial in. Give me one of your favorite stories. Love to hear it.
Sure. You know, we have this sort of three-dimensional model, and sometimes we depict it as a triangle. We're trying to improve access to care because that's so needed in behavioral health. We want to improve cost and efficiency. And then on the sort of the point of the triangle, it's really about the power of VR, right? And one of the best stories, I think, about that power of that core technique we're talking about, we were just deploying our program for addiction recovery centers. And our partners in this first clinic, they said, well, we're going to deploy this. This was an inpatient program in detox, like on people's second day of detox. We and Dr. Pete Buchers, our CMO, and he and I were talking and we were like, really, are you sure that's a good idea? Like we, you know, okay, well, let's see how this goes. Because we, you know, these people are in a great deal of discomfort, right?
Absolutely.
And to our amazement, they absolutely love it. Like the highest, we do a net promoter score, you know, likelihood to recommend. The highest net promoter scores of all of our products is our addiction program. And these patients who are going through an incredibly difficult time, I have not been through that myself. I feel fortunate to say, but those I've talked to who have, it's really, really uncomfortable and challenging time. And yet they have these incredible reactions and responses. So we had a young man at that first clinic and we didn't see this, but the clinicians there told us the story. He was absolutely stressed out. He was shaking. He was like, I can't do this. I've got to get out of here. He was, you know, in agony. And they convinced him, say, well, just try this VR program. We just want you to try this.
Yeah.
And he went from this shaking level of discomfort and arousal, did one VR session and he was calm. He went back to his group. He stayed and completed the program. I mean,
fantastic.
That's amazing. Fantastic. Like, those kind of stories will keep you getting up in the morning.
Kind of sells itself. I love that. You're even talking about a population there where the retention rate and the recidivism rate are both very significant. So you're talking about somebody who can experience a decrease in their arousal cognitively, emotionally, they're jonesing through some very difficult things. Yeah. And to give them some hope and a different experience, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's fantastic. You mentioned looking at the perinatal being another program that's in the works right now. Where do you see virtual reality going here in all of our futures? And along with that, where do you see behavior kind of joining in that process?
Well, we operate in this bigger field that some will call digital medicine. There's sort of a subset of that, digital therapeutics. I think broadly, if you think about that triangle I described, the power of VR, the increasing in access and the increases in cost efficiency or effectiveness.
Yes.
We need that broadly. We can't tackle the scale of this behavioral health challenge in the US and globally only through qualified caring humans. There aren't enough of the qualified caring humans to go around. And so we believe digital needs to be a first line of defense, right? Let's make it accessible, ubiquitous. let's get everybody that needs any kind of help onto digital and let's triage them. Some people may need just a digital program to support them and then they're feeling better. Others may need to be graduated up to some clinician operating like a top of license. You know, yes. Maybe it's a coach, maybe it's a licensed social worker, maybe it's a clinical psychologist, maybe it's a psychiatrist.
Yes.
Maybe we need to call 911 for you and get you help right now, right?
Right.
But we think of it as digital first with a triage to somebody at top of license that is matched to what you need. And so we hope that and believe that that will happen broadly in digital health, in the behavioral health space. And then what we add uniquely is that sort of power of VR, how to use that core of the parasympathetic and the resilience and non-reactivity, the exposure therapy. And then the way we wrap that in the educational and motivational content for conditions allows us to rapidly scale out new programs that are really built at the margin around that same core. So it's allowing us to get into a lot of areas quickly with a lot of clinical partners. And so we're growing fast and have some cool stuff in the works, and we're looking forward to helping more and more people every month.
Yeah, sounds exciting. You know, I'm thinking about what you said earlier about kind of comorbid or pre-existing conditions and how those compound oftentimes unknowingly what people are presenting in their life, whether it's, you know, substance, you know, struggles, or whether something medical, pain, et cetera. And a number of things medically that are just, again, so compounded with the mental health piece of it that most aren't aware of. And so being able to kind of come in and combine as they're healing physically, being able to help them enhance that with the parasympathetic responses, with the cognitive piece, with the emotional regulations, with the resilience building, all really coming together nicely. But I'm also thinking what you just mentioned right there, we are such a reactive society. You know, I get a headache and I pop the Tylenol, but I forget to turn down the radio that caused the headache. It's still blaring. And so I'm always reactive, and we're kind of trained, it seems like, many times to react to pain rather than tension or things that can build up. And what you're describing is that you're talking about different entry points of the primary care or secondary or tertiary. We can come in preventive ways, it sounds like, with the virtual reality, teach people early before these things develop. So it's just a natural part of their way of being. So those other disorders never have a chance even of being experienced because they're in that state more and more and more in life. Or if they get into something, they're going to be much more successful in going through it because of the state they're in as they go through it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's well said. One of our challenges is there's so many directions we could go in and so many opportunities. We try to choose our path carefully. The great thing is I got the healthcare bug in my years at Humana. I'd been a lifelong technologist, not a clinician, used to work in financial services, which was, you know, it was great and nice people, but, you know, securities lending systems are not nearly as emotionally satisfying as working on people's health.
Right.
And when you get that bug of how great it is to help people that really need the help and being able to improve their lives directly, you know, it's you clinicians, you know, you get it, right? So yeah. This is my little way of contributing with technology. Hearing the patient stories and narratives, just as I mentioned earlier, they literally, you know, will bring tears to your eyes about how much we can help folks. It's awesome.
It is fulfilling. That's exciting. Well, we are going to have a link on our site to yours, but if people want to learn more, Aaron, what's the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, I would direct them first to our website. It's behavior.com, BEHAVR.com. You know, we're always improving that, but describes kind of what we do and some of our products that are in the market today. And you can get in touch with us there. We're constantly trying to make this thing easier to buy and simpler and simplify pricing and so on. And we go to market as an adjunct to what human clinicians do, right? It's to sort of multiply their effect, to give them more time, to sort of scale their impact across their patient population. So yeah, we appreciate the opportunity to reach your listeners and maybe we can help them.
Fantastic. Well, you guys are truly changing in statistically significant ways the effectiveness of healthcare and its delivery in some of the most meaningful and engaging ways in your treatment approaches that I've seen in a long time. So congratulations on what you're doing. And it's been awesome to have you here with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, you're very welcome and I appreciate the invitation.
Great to be with you today. And for those of you listening, thanks for being a part of our podcast, and we look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Triad Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.